Good morning, Rabbi Yisai. So we're continuing our discussion about the Asura Harugi Malchus. I'm going to look at the Eila Eskro now, at the Medrash Eila Eskro, because it tells us some very interesting things which helps us in the things that we've been discussing till now. The Medrash starts off, Achar Churban Abayis, that after the Churban Abayis, Hoyo Pritzi Ador Miskoim, Va'omrim, Ma'ev Sadnu Bozeh Shnechar Abayis. They got used to the situation after the Churban. They're living under Roman rule. But, the wars are over, and the bias is Chorav. And they said, Ma'ev Sadnu, we can manage without a bias. They said, why? Hare yesh b'neinu talmide chachomim. Shemadrichin esu oylam b'toyroso b'mitzvoysof. We've got plenty of big tzaddikim who can lead us, and therefore we don't need a Beis HaMikdosh. That's how the Medrash starts off. So therefore, miyad nosna Hakadosh Baruch Hu belev hakesa shel roimi. So immediately Hakadosh Baruch Hu said, in that case, you think it's good enough to have tzaddikim and no Beis HaMikdosh and you can manage? Yeah, I'm going to take your tzaddikim away from you. And that was the gezeira of the Asura Harugi Malchus. Now this tells us straight away, if the Medrash Eila Eskro is reliable, and we've discussed about it, but if the Medrash is reliable, it tells us this didn't happen b'shas HaKorban. The Asura Harugi Malchus, according to this, only happened after the Churban, when the Bnei Yisrael got used to the situation without having a Beis HaMikdosh, and they suggested that maybe it's good enough, we can live in Golos, or we can live in Eretz Yisrael under Roman rule without a Beis HaMikdosh, but we've got Tzaddikim. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, in that case I'll take your Tzaddikim away from you. So we're learning straight away from the Medrash, we're not talking about B'shas HaChurban. We must be talking sometime after the Churban. And we've always been trying to pinpoint the date when these Asura Harugi Malchus happened and whether or not they could have happened together. But if we think in terms of the life of Rabbi Akiva, in the life of Rabbi Akiva was born about 50 years before the Churban, and he died, he was still alive during the rebellion of Bar Kokhba, which was 66 years after the Churban. Yeah? 66 years after the Churban. So, if he died at the age of 120, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Malish Noison Shalotz, if he was 120 when Rabbi Akiva was executed by the Hegmoim, by the Kesar Shal Roimi, which he was one of the Asura Harugi Malchus, then that would place it at about the time of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. And we already suggested that it was Rome that sent Tunus Rufus to Eretz Yisrael in order to put down the rebellion. Yeah, in order to put down and to conquer Bar Kokhba, and they had to fight a war of 2.5 years and bring troops from all over the world, including from England. They brought Roman troops, 8,000 troops, to Eretz Yisrael to crush the rebellion of Bar Kokhba. And that was probably the time when Rabbi Akiva was a supporter of Bar Kokhba, and then he was Ben Asura Harugi HaMalchus. So he must have been alive then. It's possible also that Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, who was a Kohen Gadol bizman the Beis HaMikdosh, could have survived the Churban Abayis. He was a Kohen Gadol. He was Meshamish Beis HaMikdosh. He could have survived the Churban. And then he afterwards, what would he have done? He would have learnt. Tono Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Omer Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel Loimeh. He could have had a yeshiva, he could have learnt, he could have taught, he could have been one of these Rabbonim that were teaching the Olam that they were so happy with. And maybe at the same time as Rabbi Akiva, he was also executed at the same time as Rabbi Akiva. And again, the same thing as Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, because Rabbi Gamliel was one of the first of the Tanoim, from the first wave of the Tanoim, which were Bisman HaMikdosh. This is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, his son. Could easily have been alive 60 years after the Churban, 70 years after the Churban. So it's possible that Tunus Rufus is the Rosha that we're talking about, and that we're talking about Asura Harugi Malchus, at least three of them. The first two was Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, or the other way around. Shimon ben Gamliel was first. Yeah, it could all have happened approximately 70 years after Churban Abayis, after the revolt of Bar Kokhba. But we will continue, Bli Eda.
Started at Turaway, Northwest London, Thursday, Gimel Tammuz, 11th of June, Rabbi Ari Shishler Schlitter, Chabad of Strathaven, South Africa, the Crown of Torah. This is Torah sponsored in memory of Rav Shaya Nochem ben Rabbi Avraham, from the Brocha of Gostchuk, and Nishmas, our esteemed founder, Rav Yosef Dov ben Rav Shimon Chol Tzvi Itzkovitz, Zichrono Livracha.
Thank you, Shalom Aleichem. Good. I just want to point out, you said there are troops from all over the world. At least I know where I come from was not involved. There were no troops from South Africa who went to help the Roman Empire. We had no part in the Churbanites. How do we know there was no army, Bechlal? So, Parashas Korach, obviously when it comes to Parashas Korach, everybody's going to speak about Korach. It's an intriguing thing. Such a man, such a Rasha, gets so much airtime, so much attention. It's intriguing. So we're going to do something different. Instead of speaking about Korach, let's speak about what happened positively as a result of Korach's rebellion, which is that Hashem endorses the Kohanim. At the end of the parasha, L'chov Dalet Matnas Kohuna, and effectively, it's like a shtar she a lot of iru, right? That if somebody tried to discredit a position, in this case, the position of Aaron HaKohen, so Hashem comes along after the fact, and he endorses the position of Aaron HaKohen in a very powerful way. So the Sifri, based on this parasha about the Kunas Aaron, Sifri says something which we're very familiar with. And that is Shloisha Kesorim Hain. Right? The three Kesorim. Three crowns. Newt, what are the three crowns? Keser in the order. Right? Keser Kehuna. The crown of Aaron HaKohen. To be the Kehuna. Keser Malchus. Which is David and his descendants. And Keser Torah. So Sifri says, Keser Kehuna. Aaron HaKohen took that crown, and now it's only available to him and to his descendants. Keser Malchus, David took that crown, and that's only available to him and his descendants. Keser Torah is available to everybody. So any person who wants can acquire Torah, can take Torah, can have the Keser Torah, it's completely available. The same theme appears in various places. I'm not going to go through all the various places. Instead, let's have a look for a moment at the Rambam in Hilchas Talmud Torah, the beginning of the third parak of Hilchas Talmud Torah. Because the Rambam says the same thing effectively. The Rambam says, Keser Shloisha Kesorim Hein, there are three different crowns. And he tells us the same three crowns, Keser Kehuna, Keser Malchus, Keser Torah. And he says the same thing as the Sifri. Keser Kehuna, Zochoboy Aaron Ovonov. Slightly different language to the Sifri. The Sifri says, not law. Aaron of Onam. He says, Zochabon, that Aaron and his sons were Zoiche to have the Keser Kehuna. Keser Malchus, Zochaboy David, that David was Zoiche to have Keser Malchus for him, Ula Zaray Achrab, for all his descendants. Keser Torah, same concept, it's available for anybody, any person who wants can come and can take Keser Torah. And then he says, Shema Toimar, maybe you'll think that Keser Torah is not as great as the other Ksorim. So if the Pasuk says, Bli milochim imloichu, that it's through Torah that the other two Ksorim even come to be. So that indicates that Keser Torah is greater than the Keser Kehuna and the Keser Malchus. But here's what's intriguing about the Rambam in Mishnah Torah. When he tells us that Keser Kehuna Zocha Boy Aaron, he brings a Pasuk. Brings a Pasuk to prove to us that Aaron HaKohen got Keser Kehuna. Which Pasuk? Brings the pasuk, "Vahoy soloy ulezaroy acharov beris kehuna soinam." Where's that pasuk from? Pinchas. That's not from Aaron. The whole point that he wants to illustrate is zochaboy Aaron, that Aaron is the one who got the keser Torah, keser kehuna. So what's the pasuk? A pasuk from Pinchas. Now some people want to say that the reason the Rambam does this is because the lashon of the pasuk is Beris Kehunas Oilam. And the whole point he wants to illustrate it is that it's the Keser Kehuna is Loi Ulezaroi Ad Oilam. So therefore, Beris Kehunas Oilam. Then, to prove to us that David HaMelech was Zoiche to Keser Malchus, he also brings a pasuk. What's the pasuk that he brings? And there are various pasukim, obviously, that you could use to illustrate Keser Malchus. What's the pasuk? He brings a pasuk from Tehillim. Zaroi lo oilom yiye vekisoi kashemesh negdi. That is, seed, his descendants will be forever, and his throne will be before me like the sun. What's this? Is the big raya that Keser Malchus is David's forever? Seems a bit strange, right? The pasuk that he brings for Keset Torah, that's the pasuk that everybody brings. Torah tziva lanu Moshe Moirasha kehilas Yaakov. That Torah is accessible and available to everyone. Okay, that one we get. That one we understand. But the question is, why does the Rambam bring these psukim for Keset Kehuna and Keset Malchus that the Chorah are not the only or maybe even the best sources that you could use to prove the point? So today is Gimel Tammuz. In Chabad, it's a big day. It's the 32nd Yahrzeit of the Rebbe. So I want to share something, an insight the Rebbe has on exactly this point. Because the Rebbe has a clear shita about the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. It's a very important shita to bear in mind. Which is, the Rambam writes in his introduction to Mishneh Torah that this is a sefer halachos halachos. This is not the place you go for stories. It's not the place you go for philosophy. It's not the place you go for ideology. The Rambam wrote others for him. But the Mishneh Torah, that's sefer halachos halachos. Therefore, whenever the Rambam includes something in Mishneh Torah, it has to be that it's Nogeya Lehalocha. Why did he bring Psukim Bechlal? Didn't have to bring Psukim. Sifri doesn't bring Psukim. Why does he bring Psukim in the first place? Must be that it's Nogeya, it's relevant to practical Halocha, to have Psukim. And then, of course, why did he bring these Psukim? Must be Nogeya Lehalocha. Now, once you take that Mahalach, once you appreciate that the Rambam is specifically Sefer Halochos Halochos, then you have a bigger question. Much bigger question. What's the bigger question? If this is a Sefer Halochos, and this is Hilchos Talmud Torah, what's the Rambam supposed to be telling me about in Hilchos Talmud Torah? About Torah. And if there happens to be, in the context of learning about Torah, there has to be something called Keser Torah, that's the part that's Nogea Lehalocha. The Nogal Hilchos Talmud Torah. Keser Kehuna and Keser Malchus are very beautiful and important concepts. But why are they relevant to Hilchos Talmud Torah? What's the Rambam just telling us to kind of show his bekias? You know that there's a concept called Keser Kehuna, a concept called Keser Malchus, there's a pasuk to support them. What's it Nogal Halacha when you're talking about Keser Torah? Surely, the Rambam should have just gone straight to say, there's something called Keser Torah. Keser Torah is available to everybody. Regardless, it's the Nachal HaKlal. Whoever wants it, get involved. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe Meirasha Ki Elas Yaakov, and finish. Why does he have to bring not only Keser Kehuna, Keser Malchus, but also Psukim as well? Must be that by understanding the Geder of Keser Kehuna and Keser Malchus, that is the way to understand the Geder of Keser Torah. In other words, a person could believe that Keser Torah is one thing. Until we have the insight of Keser Kehuna and Keser Malchus, we could get the wrong idea about what Keser Torah is. Okay, so that then raises a very important question. What is Keser Torah? Is it correct to say that in every reference throughout, wherever, Midrashim, Gemaras, any time that we refer to Keser Torah, are we always referring to the same thing? Is Keser Torah a uniform description that always relates to the same idea? Lav dafka. So let's just throw out a couple of examples. There's a pretty well-known story. The Gemara in Nedarim tells a story about Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon had an experience like we would have in South Africa. He got taken by an armed robber. It's not that Chas v'Shalom in South Africa people get kidnapped necessarily. But you know, you could get hijacked in your car. So I don't know what Rabbi Tarfon was driving, but he lands up in such a situation. And while he's being schlepped around in the back of the wagon or whatever they were taking him in, he says, "Oi le Tarfon," right? "Woe to Tarfon that such and such happened to me." So the guy hears him. I guess it was an Erdich Ganav or kidnapper. Says, "Oi vey, this is Rabbi Tarfon." He says, "I better let him go." So Rabbi Tarfon says, "Oi li shenishtamashti bekisro shel Torah. Chaval, that I used for personal gain, Keser Torah," because it was his renown as a Talmud Chacham that saved him from this dangerous situation. So he says, "Oili shenishtamashnu b'kisra shel Torah." So that implies that Kisra shel Torah is the Kavod HaTorah, right? That's what he used. He used the Kavod HaTorah for himself. Likewise, we have the Mishneh Pirkei Avos, "Udishtamesh b'tagoh chalof," that if a person uses Keser Torah for personal benefit, Chas v'shalom, you know, it's a very serious offense. What's Keser Torah there? Also, it would apply that is the kavod of Torah, the kavod that a person gets from Torah itself. The Rambam, on the other hand, the Rambam says, lo'olam yasi adam bitay l'talmid chacham, that a person should always make sure that his daughter marries a Talmud Chacham. Why? Because if you marry an Amo Oretz, what's going to happen is the children that they have, your grandchildren, they will grow up without appreciating Kisro Shel Torah. There, that doesn't mean the covet of Torah. That means the value of Torah. Because they'll grow up with an Amo Oretz for a father, so he'll not appreciate the value of Torah. So they'll not appreciate the value of Torah. This is a simon. In other words, the notion of Keser Torah has different meanings in different contexts. For which reason, when the Rambam's telling us that there's something called Keser Torah which is available to everybody, clearly the Rambam wants us to know it's not necessarily that kavod of Torah is available to everybody. You have to be a Talmud Chacham maybe to get the kavod of Torah. He's obviously defining for us that there's something about Torah, something which we call the Keser Torah, which is very unique, and that is available to everybody. The question is, what is this thing? What is this Keser Torah? To explain that, the Rambam tells us about Keser Kohuna and Keser Malchus. So Keser Kohuna, Zochaboy Aaron. Keser Malchus, Zochaboy David. Let's do a quick analysis of the history. When we say that Keser Kohuna, Zochaboy Aaron, that Aaron HaKohen, obviously, that's why we call him Aaron HaKohen, he is the father of Kohanim. Would you agree with that statement? Mm-hmm. Right? All Kohanim have to track back to Aaron HaKohen. He has a slightly different variation on the same question. Was Aaron HaKohen the first Kohen in history? Okay, Kohen Midian is not such an accolade. You don't want to necessarily put it right? Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem Vahu Kohen L'Kel Elyon. And that's positive. Not only that, Ad Grekach, that Avram Avinu gives him Maiser Mikol. So not only is a Kohen in the sense that he was a person who perhaps served Hashem in a particular way, he was a Kohen in a way that we know a Kohen, that you give him a tithe. Okay, we're not getting caught up on whether he called a Miser, whether it's a difference between Truma and Miser. The fact is that he's a Kohen, Lekel Elyon, he's a Kohen dedicated to Hashem, and he even receives something along the lines of Matnas Kohuna, all the way back, long before Aaron HaKohen, long before Matan Torah. Any other times that we had a Kohen before Aaron HaKohen? Moshe in the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim. Right, in the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim, before the Mishkan officially came online, Moshe Rabbeinu has the role of Kohen. He has to be Mishamish as a Kohen in the Mishkan. So what does it mean now that Aaron Zochob Keser Kohuna? What does it mean? He was Zoiche in Keser Kohuna. What changed? What's different between Malki Tzedek being a Kohen and Moshe Rabbeinu being a Kohen on the one hand, and Aaron being a Kohen or his descendants after him on the other hand? What's is there a fundamental difference? Class is similar. What's that? He and his descendants. Ah, there we go. There is an important distinction because Malki Tzedek, we don't even know who his descendants are. Okay, the Rashi says it's shame, so then you could work it out. But his descendants, Lechore, did not become Kohanim. Moshe Rabbeinu's descendants clearly didn't become Kohanim. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu himself was only a Kohen for a short period of time. So clearly there's a difference, right? Okay, good. So let's have a look at Malchus and see if it's the same. Before David was Zoiche Bekeser Malchus, were there or was there ever a king?
Sure.
Of course, it was Shaul HaMelech, right? It was Shaul HaMelech. A better question. After David, Zoiche Bekeser Malchus, were there ever other kings? Of course there were kings, right? Of course there were kings. So I'm saying not from Zera David. I'm asking, were there other kings who were not from Zera David? Of course there were. Now here's where it gets interesting. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim that if you have a king, what he calls from the Melachim HaKesherim, in other words, there were some kings who were not so great. But at the time of the split between the two kingdoms of Yehuda and Yisrael, or Yehuda and Ephraim, so what happened? You had Malchei Yisrael. And the Rambam writes clearly that Malchei Yisrael, number one, they are considered kings, especially if they're appointed by a Navi, which is effectively what happens to the Yeravam. Not only are they kings, but they can be Moirish, the role of kings, to their children. So what does it mean that David zocha loy ulezaroy achrov? That only David is the one who could pass on the kingship to his descendants. Not true. It's poshut, not true. Lehalocha, it's not true. A Melech Yisrael could pass on his rulership to his descendant. Take it one step further. The Rambam says more than that. The Rambam says not only a king, but any position of sarara, if the son is hogun, then he inherits his father's position. Right, in the modern world, they don't like this too much. They call it nepotism. But as far as halacha is concerned, if a child is hogun for the role that his father had, he is yoyresh. It's not just stum that we say, okay, listen, he's a good guy, we'll vote, we'll democratically appoint him. It's a yerusha. So what's pshat that it says by Keser Malchus, the chiddush is zocho boy David loy ulezaroy ad oilam. Maybe the ad oilam part, that it's forever. That sounds almost like a technicality. There has to be a fundamental difference that the Rambam is pointing out, bearing in mind the Mishneh Torah is Sefer Halachos, not just Sefer details, that there happens to be a nuanced detail between how you could be Moresh Melucha to the next generation. It has to be Halacha Lemaisa, it has to be something which tells us the core of what Malchus is. So the question is, what did he mean? What does the Rambam mean? And why does he change, by the way, from the Lashon HaSifri? The Lashon HaSifri is that Notla. That Notla Aaron and Notla David. Whereas the Rambam says, Zocha boy. What's the difference? Why that nuance? If you want some extra homework, you can have a look. The Hagos Maimonis says that's because the Rambam is not, his mocker is not the Sifri, his mocker is Avos Derebbe Nosson. When the Rebbe analyzes that, he illustrates that it doesn't help any of the questions. Because Avos Derebbe Nosson, the entire way that he approaches this concept of the difference between Keser Kehuna, Keser Malchus, and Keser Torah is completely, almost the exact opposite of the angle that the Rambam comes from. It's not Shaykh that he could be the mocker. Anyhow, like I say, for bonus points, as you know, can have a look in your spare time. So the question is, what is the Rambam telling us by pointing out that Keser Kehuna Zocha by Aaron Loy Lazaroy Adoylam? And the fact that to prove that, he brings a pasuk which is not about Aaron, but rather a pasuk about Pinchas. And what is he illustrating by saying that Keser Malchus, Zocha boy David, loyal Zara ad Oilam, and he brings the pasuk from Tehillim rather than a pasuk actually about David HaMelech. And why is that all negeah? Lehalocha ba Keser Torah. So to understand, it's a very simple concept that we have to just recognize. And once, you know, that's the beauty of when you have a core understanding of something. I don't know if you've ever seen, when people don't know what they're talking about, ever seen this? People get up and they don't know what they're talking about. We used to joke in yeshiva that when a bocher used to get up and begin his Dvar Torah by saying, the whole idea is, then you knew he had no idea. But on the other hand, when a person truly, truly understands something, you could just have one poshutah perspective, everything falls into place. And that's what's happening over here. We need one positive perspective that puts everything into context, which is what the Rambam wants to illustrate to us by making these comparisons, by first introducing Keser Kehuna and Keser Malchus, so we should understand what Keser Torah is in this context. What is that? When it comes to a role, so we have two roles we've identified, the role of Kehuna and the role of Malchus. When you have a role, there are two possible ways that a person could have or fulfill that role. So let's use Keser Kehuna for a moment. You have Malki Tzedek fulfilling a role of Kohen. You have Moshe Rabbeinu and the Shivas Yimei Amiluim fulfilling a role of Kohen. And then you have Aaron and his descendants fulfilling the role of Kohen. They are not just marginally, but fundamentally different. Likewise, you have Shaul HaMelech fulfilling the role of king. And then you have David and his descendant, or the Malchei Yisrael, fulfilling the role of king. Then you have David and his descendants fulfilling the role of king. Again, it's not technically different. It's fundamentally different. What's the fundamental difference? So, you know, there's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, "V'makom she'ein anoshim Histadel liyos ish. Right? So what does that mean? There are many, many explanations of what it means. But the poshta pshat is, if nobody else is stepping up, step up. I have a friend who was, you remember the tsunami in Thailand many years ago? I have a friend who was there b'shas ma'aseh, and he was not a frum guy. And when everything was, you know, people were running and trying to escape, nobody understood. People hadn't been exposed yet to what a tsunami does. It was devastation, confusion. This guy stood up, he took off his shirt, literally took his shirt off his back, held it on a broomstick, made a flag out of it, and he told people, follow me, and he led people to higher ground. Poshet saved hundreds of lives. Did he fulfill the role of leader in that story? 100%. Is he today a leader? No, he went back to his day job. Because there's a difference between when a person fulfills a role or when a role is suited to who the person is. When Moshe Rabbeinu is the Kohen for Shivas Yimei HaMiluim, and according to some days he was Kohen Gadol for Shivas Yimei HaMiluim, that doesn't become who Moshe Rabbeinu is. When the week is over, he goes back to being Moshe Rabbeinu. He fulfilled the role, but he wasn't misatze, he didn't become one with that particular, he doesn't become a Kohen in his bones, in his DNA. He fulfilled a role of Kohen because there was a requirement for that role to be fulfilled. When Shaul HaMelech is king of Israel, as we know very well, Shmuel HaNavi says, this is wrong. This is not how you should appoint a king. Even the Eibishter says, don't worry, Shmuel, it's not personal. You know, this is an affront to me. Does Shaul fulfill the role of king? He fulfills the role of king. When you fulfill a role, you can even transfer it to the next generation, even as a Yerusha. What's a Yerusha? Well, you have an asset that goes from one person to the next person. Like the Loshen HaSifri. Not law. You take something from somebody else. Even though Yerusha is not really taking. Yerusha is effectively the Yerush is Bimkoy Morish. Okay, fine. But the principle is that what's happening is something's transferring from one person to the next. The Rambam writes about the Malchei Yisrael HaKsherim, after telling us all the wonderful things about how Melech Yisrael could be 100% a Melech, he says, the Pasuk, Losis Olecho Ish Nochri, which the Gemara brings with Benegahu, Agrippas, that even though he is a Melech Yisrael, and he has all the bells and whistles, and he fulfills the role, he is still fundamentally called a Nochri. Why? Because there's a difference between a person fulfilling a role versus a person that was given a gift from Hashem, that this becomes who you are, the essence of who you are.
And Shaul wasn't really cut out to be the king. Right?
He wasn't, exactly. So he fulfills a role. It's for sure not, even though it's Mishich Moyol Maila Gavoy Mikola Om and all the great accolades, at the end of the day, he's not a king Be'etzem. He's effectively playing the role of king. He's the designated survivor. You know, like they have in the government structure, you know. Right now, the president is incapacitated. You're the designated survivor, Kielu. That's what he is. Not Chas V'Shalom to undermine Shaul HaMelech, but that's what he is. He's not a Melech Be'etzem. He's a Melech in practice. That's what the Rambam wants to illustrate to us by teaching about Keser Kehuna and Keser Malchus. That's why he brings the Pasuk of who? Pinchas. Why Pinchas? Because Pinchas has this unique transformation from being somebody who is not really a Kohen. He did not have the Zera Kuna because it's only Loi Ule Zaroi Acharov and he's already born, so he doesn't really have the Kuna. What happens? Hashem says to him, Vahoy So Loi Ule Zaroi Acharov Bris Kuhuna As Oilam. You know what's going to happen here? I'm going to give you Kuhuna. It's not something you took. Not law, like the Sifri says. You took a position because nobody else was fulfilling the position. I'm giving it to you, and I'm giving it to you in such a way that transforms who you are, so that's loyu lezaroi acharov. I'm transforming you. Here, nobody could have any qualms, nobody can have any confusion about how he came to be a Kohen. This is a gift from Hashem directly. In fact, if you want to get technical, it's a gift that makes no sense. Right? You know that famous story, the guy comes to the rabbi and he says, how much does it cost to become a Kohen? Right? You can't buy the kahuna. You can't earn the kahuna by standing up. Bekanoyes kinasi. It's a gift that Hashem gives. When Hashem gives you a gift, that gift is absolute. Now Pinchas is a transformed person. That's why the Rambam wants to bring that pasuk, because that pasuk illustrates to us what is Keser Kehuna. Keser Kehuna means not just to have the title Kohen, but Keser Kehuna means to have a transformation of the essence of who you are, that you are now a Kohen in the core of your being. You're a Kohen in your DNA. Good, good. Exactly. More than that. Not only, it's a very good point. So he got the gift because he assumed leadership when nobody else stood up. Even Moshe Rabbeinu did not stand up. So you could take it one step further. Not just that he assumed leadership, but as we well know, the Yerushalmi says that he did it Shaloi Bertzoin Chachomim. Not only did he assume leadership, he went against the leaders. Which leaders? Chachomim. What he did was effectively questionable in halacha. So what?
If someone is a Kohen, his children become Kohen.
If a person is a Kohen, his children become automatically a Kohen. Only since when? Only since Aaron was Zeichen Keser Kehuna. And then Pinchas is, so to speak, the example that proves the rule. That when Pinchas becomes a Kohen, that proves the rule. So in other words, because he did something that is so radical, that is so out of the ordinary, the Eivishter does something to him which is so radical and out of the ordinary, he makes a Kohen out of somebody who can never be a Kohen. Likewise, the Keser Malchus, what's the Pasuk? Zaroi lo oilom iye v'kisoi, kisoi, which is the role of being a kohen, kashemesh negdi, it's like the sun, just as the sun is nitzchi, so too the kohuna is nitzchi. The malchus is nitzchi. This is part of who you are. This is why the Rambam brings keser kohuna and keser malchus as the introduction to keser Torah. So we should realize, in the same way as for a kohen, ever since Aaron a kohen, kohuna is who you are, not the role that you play. In the same way as Keser Malchus from the time of David HaMelech, and Melech is who you are, not just the role that you play. In the same way when he tells us that Keser Torah is available to every single Jew, any person who chooses can come and you could take Keser Torah. You have to realize that Torah for every single Jew is not what we do, it's not what we learn, it's who we are. That's the Rambam's Chiddush. That Keser Torah means every single year, regardless, my Rosh Kehilas Yaakov, just like a Tinek Ben Yoimoy is Yoresh Asakol, it's got nothing to do with ability, it has nothing to do with religiosity, it has nothing to do with whether I deserve it or not. Keser Torah is the essence of who we are. It's not something that we commit to, it is an expression of the essence of our being. In the same way as Keser Kehuna and Keser Malchus became the essence of their being. So the lesson clearly for us is that obviously Torah is available. We should chaparayin. We should take as much as we possibly can. We should learn Yomam Valayla. And we should recognize that we're not learning something external. And that's why the Rambam doesn't use the Lashon of the Sifri. Not law. We're not taking the Torah. Rather, we're discovering how the Torah is one literally with our own neshamas. Shkaya.
Thank you.
Thank you.